The hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
Oh, thank you, everybody, and welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of Chicago, internet radio all around the world, international. Everybody listens to this show, and it is a great show. Thank you for it's a great show because you tell me that it's a great show. I'm not saying it's a great show because I'm the host. I'm the talk show host. I'm saying what you tell me and what you inbox me, and and that always makes me feel good. So I get calls from and guests on this show from all over the world, internationally. And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. We've been having some technical problems, but we finally made it on the air, and hopefully that will suffice on into this great show, this great episode, this great time. All right. In Chicago, it's been some great weather, folks. It has been some super duper weather, but it looks like it's going to storm. I mean, it's like it's going to just tear the place apart, you know, and I'll be the first one to go because I'm sitting near my open window in my studio and I'm looking out on the Broadway here. But I think it's going to be fine. I think it's just we're just having spring weather, and spring weather is what? Spring weather is just is what it is. Spring weather, tornadoes, hurricanes, bad weather, storms. This is all the sign of spring, so it shouldn't, as long as it's not too horrific. But it's a beautiful time, and thanks everybody for being with me. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for archiving the show. Thanks for posting this show, certain episodes of this show, onto your own website or your own blog, and letting your fans and your friends listen to you on this show. That's great. That's wonderful. My guest today is Ron Steele. He's a great author. From what I've seen, I haven't heard from him yet, but from what I've seen on his website and on the emails and Amazon.com, he has written some pretty good, I believe it's fiction, but we'll talk to him later. Hopefully about the pearls of writing. And like I said, welcome to the show. Welcome to the show. I'm a little bit under the weather, folks, but I'm here. I am here, and we're going to be going all the way from the time the show is on. I'm on 6 o'clock every evening from Monday through Thursday. I believe I made a mistake in one of the shows and said Monday through Friday, because Monday through Friday is just so easy to say. Monday through Thursday is kind of tough, you know, because there's, you know, during the work week or business week, there's only basically 5 days, but people do business on the weekends also. Anyway, thanks folks for being here, and thanks for all you do and your kind words and all this kind of thing for my show, my books, my writings, you know, my son. Thanks for everything. I mean, my future wife, if that should ever take place. And welcome to the show. Well, let's move on. Okay, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I'm still working on some introduction audio for the show. I try to change it up, switch it up, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. At this time, it didn't work, but we're going to try it again. We're going to try this again. And folks, it does look gloomy in Chicago. Gloomy, gray, but it's not raining, but they're saying it's going to come. And I hope wherever you're listening to this show, that it's great and wonderful. The weather is great and wonderful where you are. And in the city this morning, it was pretty nice this morning. I mean, when I dropped my son off, it was pretty nice outside. But then, you know, this is Chicago weather. You walk around the corner, bang, it changes. All right, let's move right along. Oh, I want to say something about the Chicago Blackhawks. This is the last, tonight is the last night that they can try to stay relevant in the playoffs. I mean, this is game seven for them. So we're rooting for the Blackhawks in the city of Chicago. I'm pretty sure you're probably rooting for your team wherever you are. That's fine. That's fine. And we're just rooting for them tonight, because if they don't make it tonight, they're out. But if they do make it, they go to the next round in the playoff hunt. And that's great. And I mean, the Blackhawks in the last 4 or 5 years have been winning their asses off. You know, at first, I wasn't too much of a hockey fan. You don't find too many African-Americans who are hockey fans. But I didn't think I would become a hockey fan. I became a hockey fan because the Blackhawks were winning. And I love winners. And most just about everybody out there, we like winners. And Blackhawks are winners, so you go with the winners, right? And don't let me forget to mention the Cubs, the White Sox and the Cubs. These guys are awesome. They are winning their asses off. You know, I mean, they are, I mean, the Cubs are, I mean, they are winning so nasty that it's becoming historical. One for the history books, you know, so, and my thinking is that the Cubs keep going the way they're going. There is no doubt we're talking World Series here, folks, for the Chicago Cubs. And I'm not kidding. I mean, I had my doubts at the beginning of the season. But so far, I mean, they've just outplayed, outmaneuvered, and outclassed every team that they played. I mean, when they beat these teams, they beat them badly. Badly. I mean, they had a no-hitter the other day. 16-0, I believe. And I think it was yesterday or the day before, it was 7-0. The Cubs beat these teams. I mean, they give them a whipping. So those are some of the great highlights of living in the city of Chicago. We have some great sports teams. We don't want to talk about the murder, the killing, the mayhem, the violence. We want to talk about something that's positive that's going on in the city of Chicago, the city that I call home, and the city of over 2 to 3 million people call home, you know, regardless of the ongoing violence. And we're going to talk about that later on into the show. So I just want to still say welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show live. Follow me on Facebook, Blog Talk Radio, right here. Click like or click follow or something to that effect, because this is a great show. I've been on almost 2 years, folks, and every show I've had a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun. And one of the things I know about being on a radio show, whether it's internet or traditional or over-the-air radio, the host of that show has a monumental task. And that monumental task is always building an audience. And it takes time to build an audience because, you know, people come by, they listen, they may not listen again. It may not be their fault. It may not be anything wrong with what I'm doing or saying or my show. It's just that sometimes people don't have the time to listen at certain hours of the day because they're busy with their family. They got their jobs. They got their errands. They got to do pay bills. I understand all of that. But that's why you can archive this show and download it and listen to it anytime at your convenience. You know, at your convenience, gather your family and friends around the internet or around your phone. And that's a great thing about it. People are downloading my show, listening to my show on their iPhones, on their phones. And that's great. I'm walking down the street, the earphones on their head, listening to my show. And that's a great thing. That's wonderful. And I'm always going to try, if possible, to do a good show, because if I don't do a good show, you guys are going to turn me off and not listen again. But building an audience for, I don't care if it's a television show, building an audience takes a lot of time and energy, because people are not going to give up their time to listen to something that is not of their interest. You got to make things interesting to people in order for them to tune in to your show and to see what you have to offer them, you know, so that's what I try to do. And if I can get back to the sports teams here, they are doing a great job. They are doing a wonderful job. This is the city of Michael Jordan. I mean, he is phenomenal. In front of the internet, I mean, not the internet. What am I thinking? In front of the United Center downtown on Madison Street, there's a great big statue of Michael Jordan. This is not the home of Al Capone. This is the home of Chicago, is the home of great sports teams. Okay? If you think of Chicago, it's a great place to live, even though the taxes are high. It's totally expensive in this town. That's why there are so many homeless people out here, because they can't afford the rents, the high condos, the high mortgages or whatever that they want to get into. This is an expensive city, and it's getting more expensive as I am broadcasting on the radio today, which I am broadcasting out of the city of Chicago. I'm near the lake here. And as if I can divert back to the weather, it's always cooler near the lake. So sometimes it's cold near the lake, you know. And that's true. That's true. If I look at, listen to the meteorologists or the weather people, whenever they say cooler near the lake or cooler by the lake, they are actually telling the truth for once. But, you know, who knows? The storm in Chicago, it was supposed to have been here. I mean, they were talking about in the afternoon. And this is not the afternoon anymore in Chicago. This is evening. And the storms haven't showed up, at least not on this part of the in this part of town. It could be raining and storming in some other part of the city, waiting to get here. But as of now, I see nothing but grayness and darkness. But hey, I feel good. It's okay. And we're ready to do this show. Okay, smart quiz question. Name one branch of government. I mean, if you don't know, don't worry about it. It's just something I add to the show to try to make it a little bit more interesting, you know. So, but I will try to have that answer by the end of the show. Sometimes, you know what, folks, sometimes I forget to give the answer to the question. Once I'm off the air, I said, damn, I forgot to give the answer to the smart quiz question. Well, maybe, you know, who knows? All right. Listen to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We will be right back, folks. Stay with me.
The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air.
Okay, all right. Can you believe it, folks, that Cruz and Kasich, they are plotting against Donald Trump to try to thwart him from getting the nomination? They're ganging up on Donald Trump. It seems that the entire Republican establishment ganging up on Donald Trump. I don't think that's fair. I mean, I'm not a Donald Trump supporter. I would never vote for this guy. But when people are constantly trying to, you know, of course, Donald Trump, in my estimation, is unfit to be president, but he could wind up being president. See, Kasich and Cruz's explanation for ganging up to try to get Donald out of the race is that he cannot beat Hillary Clinton. He can't beat her. Neither can Cruz beat her. Neither can Kasich. I think this is going to backfire on the Republican establishment. I think this is going to cause Donald Trump's momentum to just grow. For his own party, to try to oust him, to try to make him look bad. Donald Trump don't need anybody to make him look bad. He can do that all by himself. But for these guys, all these guys to gang up on him, to try to thwart him from getting their nomination is crazy. I mean, he can wind up being president of the United States, but if he doesn't have a Republican Congress to work with, he will not get anything done, no matter how crazy he talks. You know, so I'm just giving my side of what I think of all of this, folks. And I think it's stupid. I think it's crazy. I think Hillary is going to beat him. I think Hillary is going to beat them all. I think some of the Republicans who are pissed off at Donald Trump, who are pissed off at Republicans Cruz and Kasich, they're going to either not vote, stay home, or they're going to switch their vote from Republican to Democrat, and Hillary would have a smooth landslide, actually, into the White House. Because I believe the Republicans are – this has never happened before from what I'm hearing from reports. This has never happened before. So this is unprecedented. And I think it's going to backfire, and I think it's going to give Donald Trump supporters more of ammunition to oust these guys. I mean, they looking sick. I'm looking at photographs of them, folks, on the internet, and they look like clowns, the clowns that they are. They also look like sore losers. So we can't win it, so we're going to stop Donald Trump. This is no way for a party to act. You're supposed to be unified, but they can't stand Donald Trump, and a lot of them can't stand Ted Cruz. I am neither a Democrat nor I am a Republican. I am an independent. I left the Democrats a long time ago because they deserve criticism too. They don't do a damn thing sometimes either. You know, so, but I am nowhere near Republican. I voted Republican once or twice, but, you know, that was then. This is now. So this is crazy. You always got to stay tuned and see what, you know, what other kind of BS is going to come out of the Republican Party. And Donald Trump is all over the airwaves blasting Ted Cruz, and he's blasting John Kasich as idiots, and he's calling them pathetic. In some cases, he's, in my estimation, he's right. They are pathetic. The guy is going to win the nomination. Why not get behind him? Donald Trump blasts them, saying that they're puppets to their donors. They're puppets to the people who are giving them money. He may be right on that what he is saying. He could be right. Because they're taking money. Donald Trump doesn't have to take money because he's spending his own money in this campaign. He pays for his own rallies. He pays for everything. These guys, they are taking money. But when you take money from organizations and you take money from Wall Street, you have to do their bidding. They're not giving you that damn money for free to get up there and say you support poor people. If you get up there and say you support poor people, they will not get another dime because their donors, their rich donors and Wall Street and super PACs, they will not allow that. They don't want that. You're not going to take care of poor people. You're going to take care of all of us rich people. The hell with them. They don't have anything. We have everything. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm talking about John Kasich and Ted Cruz trying to outmaneuver Donald Trump. And this is all over everywhere. And these people are making no bones about wanting to destroy Donald Trump. The mutual non-aggression pact between Ohio Governor John Kasich and Texas Senator Ted Cruz appeared to hit a speed bump mere hours after it was announced on Sunday. So obviously, this thing is backfiring on them already. Already. The two Republican presidential candidates are hoping to stop frontrunner Donald Trump from winning delegates in upcoming primaries by dividing time and resources between their respective campaigns. Cruz will focus on winning in Indiana while Kasich will focus on winning in New Mexico and Oregon. Wow. But the duel hit a ditch. Something went wrong, folks. It didn't go right for them. This is what they were hoping, but it didn't go right for them. They hit a ditch on the messaging front on Monday after Kasich told reporters that Indiana voters should still vote for him, even if his campaign is planning to focus on other contests. Okay, basically he's saying, hey, you can vote for Donald Trump, but also vote for me. I mean, this is crazy. okay, I never told them not to vote for me. They ought to vote for me, he said to voters in Indiana at a campaign stop in Maryland. I'm not campaigning in Indiana, and Cruz is not campaigning in those other states. That's all. That's all it is. Not a big deal. Oh, yes, it is a big deal, Mr. Kasich. You guys are assholes. That's all it is. That's all. The Cruz speaking, Porter's minutes later at a campaign stop in Indiana, gave the development some heft. However, and I'm quoting him, it is big news today that John Kasich has decided to pull out of Indiana, he said. Top Kasich strategist John Weaver tried to clarify his candidate's comments on Twitter. There's always somebody somewhere trying to clarify somebody's comments on Twitter. When they open their mouths and these things came out of their mouths, but they always got to be clarified because we, the public, we missed the clarification of this. We take these statements out of context. So they have to kind of clarify it for us as if we're stupid. You know, what happens is these candidates, they say stupid things. They say stupid stuff. And then they try to back out of it and blame you, me, and everybody who reads it that we taken it out of context when this stuff came out of their mouths verbally. Verbatim. And then they try to apologize for, well, you got it wrong. We didn't get anything wrong. You just backtracking and now you're lying. That's the bottom line, folks. They're lying and and it doesn't make sense. But I like I said before, I think this whole thing is going to backfire on John Kasich and Ted Cruz. I think Donald Trump is going to swarm them. However, this thing is going to, no doubt about it, I don't care anything about Ted Cruz, John Kasich, and even Bernie Sanders, even though I've said many times on the show that I'm a Bernie Sanders supporter, but I don't think Bernie is going to make this. It's too much of an uphill climb for him. Even if he wins every state, it's still going to be too much of a climb for him to get the remaining delegates that he needs. That he actually needs. Excuse me. Did I hiccup? I think I hiccup. Sorry, folks, if I hiccuped. But maybe I need a drink of water or something. We're going to do that, get a drink of water when I take a break here. But anyway, this is exciting, folks. I mean, this is very exciting. And I want to say to Bernie Sanders supporters out there, this guy, we have to look at it in reality. I don't think he's going to make it. I love Bernie. I think he's great. I think he's wonderful, but he is not going to make this, folks. And we have to, all Bernie supporters should throw their support behind Hillary Clinton to stop Donald Trump. Okay? I mean, the Republicans are trying to stop him. So, hey, wow, the Democrats are trying to stop him too. See, I would hate to be in Donald Trump's shoes, minus the money, because both parties are trying to stop him. His own party, the Republicans, are trying to stop him, and also the Democrats are trying to stop him. So he's right there in the middle, and everybody's pouncing on him. So he has to feel a little bit wondering what's going on. His own party should be behind him. There's no doubt about it. His own party should be there for him, but they don't want him. They don't like him. They think he's a buffoon. They think he's unpresidential. They think he's unfit. So does most of the world. But still, you know, he is a Republican. And he will be nominated. You know, it doesn't matter what these clowns try to do, you know, try to come up with to stop him. The people of his own party. He is going to be it. There are so many people out there supporting Donald Trump, supporting him. I mean, you got African Americans supporting Donald Trump, which baffles me, okay? And they've seen the violence at his rally. They've seen the racism. They've seen him say nasty things about Muslims and Mexicans, and but they still support him. They, you know, and it's beyond me. You know, I don't support him. I never did. Just like I didn't support this governor in Illinois, Bruce Rauner, I never did, and I'm proud that I never did because he's not good for this state. But I do think that Hillary is going to take this. Hillary is going to take this. She's going to beat the hell out of Donald Trump. And this is what Kasich, Cruz are afraid of. So if, let's say, I mean, just let's say if they do wind up knocking Donald Trump out of the nominee department for president of the United States, then who's going to step up? Paul Ryan just said he didn't want it. Who's going to step up? I'm thinking maybe Ted Cruz. You know, so I'm talking about the Republicans, folks. And I want to say something about Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, you know, I love the guy, and I've always have. And there are some people out there who are Bernie Sanders supporters who are pleading for people to support him, for people to vote for him, even though it's an uphill climb for him in the delegate count, from what I'm hearing. It's an uphill climb, and I believe it too. It's an uphill climb. But Bernie made a few statements that I thought was irresponsible. And I've always been a Bernie Sanders, but when someone says something that ticks me off, I will call him out about it. Bernie said, and I quote, that poor people don't vote. He said this after he lost New York to Hillary Clinton. And virtually losing New York to Hillary Clinton, you know, just about says that he should hang it up. He done lost. And then he's going to go out and say, he said some other questionable remarks, but this one, this remark here kind of grabbed me, saying that poor people don't vote. Because obviously he sounded like he was pissed off because he lost. So he's saying the reason why I lost because poor people didn't vote. I think the reason why he lost because poor people didn't vote, or people in general did not vote. I think he just lost because more people in New York were in love with Hillary Clinton than Bernie Sanders. I think he lost because of that, not because poor people did not vote. And I have to agree, I think there's more people voting in these primaries than they did 2 or 3 years ago, because I think a lot of people are waking up. And a lot of people who probably didn't vote is because their vote was suppressed by their individual governor. But, you know, I totally disagree with him on that. And if you want to say that poor people don't vote, Bernie, you have to go back, think inside of yourself and say, in general, people don't vote. You don't have to say poor. Because you've got people who, middle-class people that don't vote. You got rich people that do not vote. So you cannot just isolate poor people and say they don't vote, you know, because a lot of poor people do vote because they're the ones who are looking for the services. So they do vote. Then some do not vote because some of them just don't give a damn. They don't vote because they don't give a damn. They don't care. But then when the wrong person gets into office and start slashing and burning social services programs, a lot of them say, hey, wow, we should have voted, but then it's too damn late. So I don't agree with what he said. I don't even like what he said because I think it's wrong. I think it's wrong-sided of him. And I'm not the only one that has criticized Bernie for this. You know, some people in higher places have criticized him for his statement, I mean, it's been all on the news, all on Huffington Post and everywhere. I just think he was wrongheaded when he said that. He may have apologized since then. I'm not sure. I haven't heard it. I haven't seen it or heard it. But I do expect it. Will he do it? I don't know, but I do know this. He has a long way to go in trying to get the nomination because it's just gotten a lot harder for him by losing New York. I mean, Hillary whipped his ass. I'm not a Hillary fan. I kind of wish he would have lost because she's totally, in my estimation, she's totally not trustworthy. I've seen it in every debate. I've seen it when she goes around the country campaigning and talking to other people. She looks so phony. And I've had people say to me, George, don't criticize Hillary Clinton. Don't criticize her. Don't do that. We don't want a Republican. I mean, if I see something in a person and I see something that's not right in the person, I visualize it, I'm going to say something about it. Nobody can tell me who to criticize and not to criticize. I criticize who I want. But when I criticize someone, it's going to be truthful. And also, if I like the person, it's going to be constructive criticism that I will give out. However, I will say this again. If Bernie doesn't make it, and it looks like he's not going to make it, all of Bernie's supporters should throw their weight around Hillary Clinton. Throw their vote, I should say, to Hillary Clinton. Hold your nose and vote for her. We cannot. Or if you don't do that, you're going to have Mr. Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, I should say. President Donald Trump. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook, Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on all over the place. We're going to take a slight break right here, and we will be back, and we will be talking about crime in the city of Chicago. Stay with me.
Major funding for NPT Reports Domestic Violence is provided by Waller, supporting the legal needs of Nashville's business community for more than 100 years. Time and again, our clients come for the lawyer, but stay for the firm. The First Tennessee Foundation, dedicated to strengthening the vital signs of our healthy communities. The Women's Fund of the Community Foundation of Middle Tennessee, dedicated to transforming the lives of women and girls and improving the well-being of our entire community. And members of NPT, thank you.
This program contains real and dramatized violent content which may be too intense for some viewers. Parental and viewer discretion is advised.
What we hear all the time is, you swept me off my feet. Usually they are the most charming man you've ever wanted to meet. They reel you in. I never knew anybody like him. My mother loved him. My father loved him. One of the things we talk about is push for quick involvement. You meet these guys, they sweep you off your feet, and 2 months later, you're married. have this excessive charm, and then we have the beginnings. And it's insidious. It starts slowly. I love you so much that I want to be with you every second. Yeah, I want to go to the grocery store with you. I don't want to be away from you. I love you. You're beautiful. Don't go to work. I'll make enough money. Stay home. It sounds like what we love. Women want it. We want to be loved that way. And then it turns into, why are you at the grocery store within 20 minutes? You're not going to the grocery store. It turns into something else.
In the beginning, he made me feel beautiful, young, loved, cherished, and I just, that was something that I hadn't really felt very much in my life.
It seemed like he was always there when I needed someone, always put a smile on my face when I didn't have one. When I was going through a real rough time, he was there for a shoulder for me to lean on.
When I met my husband, he was so charming. He was warm. He was very gentle. And he just catered to everything I wanted. He was romantic. I fell for that.
We're familiar with the headlines. Violent crimes happening in our community, stabbings, shootings. However, more than half of the violent crimes occurring in Tennessee are not happening between strangers. Rather, the threats, the injuries, and homicides are being committed by the person who says, I love you. Domestic violence is not arguments that escalate out of control. It's one partner in an intimate relationship asserting control over the other. It's about power and control. Here in Tennessee, the numbers and severity are far greater than the national average. Our state ranks third in the nation for the rate at which women are killed by men and has ranked in the top five for several years. This is a public safety crisis, according to Governor Haslam, because there is no typical victim of domestic violence. Statistics tell us we all could be vulnerable.
Abusive relationships start out like all relationships. If you were going to go out with someone for the first time and they reached over and they hit you in the face, you probably wouldn't want to go out with that person again. Sometimes it's almost too good at the beginning of an abusive relationship. The person may be buying their partner flowers or calling them a lot, texting them a lot, checking in on them, and it feels really good.
Domestic violence is an escalating pattern of abuse in which one partner establishes control through force, intimidation, or the threat of violence. This relationship has predictable phases, as shown in the cycle of violence. There's a period of tension building, followed by an acute explosion, and then the apologetic honeymoon.
In an abusive relationship, the next part of the cycle after the honeymoon is what we call tension building. And that's where the partner may start to just let you know that they're in the control of the situation.
Do you want me to call him?
No, I said I'll take care of it, so I'll take care of it, all right?
They might start telling you what to wear or where you could go, who you can see.
You understand me?
They might limit the victim's control over their lives in subtle ways that the victim might not recognize right at first. And then what happens is we come to what's called the explosion or the outburst. And at that point, there may be hitting, there may be yelling, there may be screaming.
I'm really sorry.
You're really sorry. You know what's really sorry? You're really sorry.
Who is always sorry? You're the one who's always sorry, aren't you?
If I were the victim, I might say to my partner, you know, nobody's ever done that to me before. If you do that to me again, I'm going to leave you. And then what happens is my partner says to me, oh, I'm so sorry, baby. I love you so much. I promise I won't do it again. I won't let it happen again. Please just give me another chance. And here we are back at the honeymoon. And we may stay in that part of the cycle for a while. It could be a few minutes. It could be a few months. It could be even longer than that. Basically, the abuser's going to keep the victim in the honeymoon part of the cycle again, as long as they need to keep them in the relationship.
Valerie Nguyen has worked in the field of domestic violence for 17 years. She is the founder and chief executive officer of Mary Parish Center in Nashville. In its first 9 years, the center provided a myriad of life-saving non-residential services to more than 6,000 victims of domestic and sexual violence. In 2009, the center significantly shifted its focus to become the largest single-site therapeutic transitional housing program in Tennessee. Women and their children are provided cost-free housing for up to 2 years.
The average victim takes 7 times before she leaves for good. She leaves, she goes back, she leaves, she goes back. And in the years I've done this work, I'm often asked, why? Because we love them. Because they're charming. Because they made us feel beautiful and wonderful like no one we've ever known. And because after they hurt us, they are the most contrite, and they sob, and they beg, and we're the mother of their children, and we want a family, and so we go back. They'll have what we call the honeymoon phase, where everything's lovely. Then the violence starts again, and almost always it's worse than it was when she left the first time. The whole thing's escalated, and now he's going to punish you for the fact that you left.
There are occasions where our victims of domestic violence tell us that their batterer has actually taken them to the hospital for them to receive treatment, waited with them while they were taken care of, and brought them back home. And then the honeymoon starts all over again. I heard a client say once that her batterer bought her a car, and things went well for a while in the relationship after that, but she was abused again at a later time.
There was a lot of personality change for me because I tried to change the way I was because I thought I was the cause of the abuse. So if I changed the way I was, maybe he wouldn't hit me. Maybe he wouldn't scream at me or call me these ugly names that he used to call me or do the things that he used to do. And I changed a lot. I used to be a bubbly, outgoing person, and I became very depressed and sour and serious, and I lost me.
Isolation is one of the big deals. Wow. So I'm going to isolate you. But pretty much you have to think, if I wanted to have complete control over you, what kind of things would I have to do? Well, first of all, I'm going to take away your car. You're not going to have friends or family around you, because I want all of your attention. You most likely are not allowed to have a job. If you do have a job, it's monitored when you leave, when you come home. All the money's given there because financial control. If I'm going to control you, I don't want you to have money. I don't want you to have gas in your car.
When I do look back, I find that there were indicators. I am very passive, and with him, as soon as I married him, his whole disposition changed with me. Immediately I became owned. And he said so right there as soon as the I do's were done. He said, now you're my wife. Now you need to act like my wife. But as time went on, just little bits of comments, small areas of isolation, then complete isolation.
I think one thing we see a lot is in cell phone usage, someone pulling the phone away and checking that phone and just kind of scrolling through and asking, who is this call from? Who is this? That's not acceptable. We have a right to our cell phones and our cell phone usage and not expect we're going to be interrogated. It's very critical to have friendships outside of the realm of that intimate partner relationship. If that person is constantly demanding all of your time and not wanting you to go out and have friends or, moreover, even have relationships with your family, then that is another example of an unhealthy boundary, and we certainly have to have those relationships. It's important for life.
We used to give out little cards to women to say the character's just abuser. But before I gave out the card, I'd say, let me tell you about Joe. And I'd start telling her. you're with a garden variety abuser. And that's a very important thing to say to a domestic violence victim, because it takes the burden off her. It lets her know it wasn't you. He would have done this with anybody. You just happened to be at the right place at the wrong time. And we oftentimes see, and this is fascinating, a woman will call a woman and say, "You're going out with Joe. He used to be married to me. Just get away from him. He's going to hurt you." Happens all the time. And he does hurt them, which is why I end up meeting them. So we have this repetitive behavior with both the victim and the abuser.
The National Intimate Partner and Sexual Violence Survey finds 1 in 4 women and 1 in 7 men will experience severe physical violence by an intimate partner at some point in their lifetime.
When we work with a victim of domestic violence and she begins to explain to us the dynamics and the roles that exist in their home and in their relationship, it becomes very clear that there is very rigid thinking and very unrealistic expectations and stereotypes that exist in the mind of a batter. It's very black and white. A batter often believes that that victim is there to serve them and to supply all the emotional needs and all the happiness that he feels like he deserves, or in some cases she feels that she deserves. And it's really hard to meet that mark.
A lot of times people will ask you, what did you do wrong when it comes to the behavior of your husband? And it's so easy for people to say you deserved it or you made him act like that.
Right? She's talking that dirtbag, shit-filled pants.
If I have to say this about myself, I was an honest wife. I love my husband. I love my children. I cared for everything about where we were and who we were as a family. His behavior was given to me slowly. I realized that he had issues from his past that he had not dealt with. And so I'm thinking, okay, I'll just love you out of this, you know, because I care for you just that much. And it wasn't enough. The love wasn't enough.
I couldn't understand how somebody could say that they love you and turn around and hit you. So I always felt like that it must have been something that I was doing to provoke this anger in him. His phrase with me always was, "You have the most beautiful face I've ever seen. I could look at you forever." And he turned around at one point and punched me in the face and broke my nose.
My first marriage didn't work out, and, you know, so, you know, it must be me, you know. That's what I thought. It had to be me. It couldn't be both of them. It had to be me. It's not just about being hit. It's the words. It's the mean words. I'm going to degrade you until I think you are low enough. It's the money. Here, take this $20 and make it last all week. It's the children. You better not leave these children here with me. It's a sexual relationship. Forced sex. Maybe no sex. Communication with the outside world. My husband broke my phone. He ran over it. Threw it in the ditch. So when I had to call my mom or my sister, I had to beg him for his phone, and he would stand right there listening to me talk. And of course, conversations are short, not long and laughy like they used to be, but short and quick and off. So this thing was, nobody needs to know what's going on in my house. It started getting verbal, call a bitch, and then it just, you know, accelerate up and up and up from that, if you can only imagine, you know, being called something worse than that. You know, down, that degrades you. From the start of the abuse, I started feeling bad about myself. It was basically just go to work, come home. He had a problem because I made more money than he did. So I used to hear that a lot in the verbal abuse. Got so physical one time to the last time that, you know, I got kicked so much in my abdomen and thrown down the stairs that I started having very bad genital bleeding. And I'm still dealing with that today.
You can be controlled by the clothes that you are made to wear. You can be controlled with foods that you are allowed or not allowed to eat. You can be controlled by not being able to use your own vehicle or not having access to money in the family. There are so many ways that a person can be controlled that does not include physical violence.
My husband was a burner. He would burn things. And so, of course, we would leave the house and come back and things would be broken. Things would be burned, cut, you know. And I'm questioning him, why would you do this? Why would you destroy our things? Oh, I didn't do that. And he would have no remorse.
Generally, it starts with name calling, and then it's pushing. Sometimes it's I'll throw an object, but not at you, but close to you.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio.
All right, welcome back to the show, folks. You were just listening to domestic violence. And I'm gonna have a show on that. I'm gonna have that in its entirety. Because that was riveting. That was something. So look forward for that. I've done domestic violence shows before, and I've always tried to keep those kind of things in the forefront because it's happening every day in America. It's happening all around the world, and it's pathetic. It's happening in an apartment. It's happening in a house. It's happening all over the place. On the streets, in the back alley, in the workplace, domestic violence. You know, I mean, I've seen too many stories and heard too many reports of guys getting guns, going to their girlfriends or ex-girlfriends' workplace and just gunning her down. So we're going to talk about that in a future show. So stay tuned for that. It should be riveting. I'm going to have more people on to talk about it. And even some people who have probably experienced it. So stay tuned for that. We're going to see what that's about. Okay, let's move on to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I want to talk about Prince. As we all know, Prince died a few days ago. If you're listening to the show, it's a few days ago. And if you're listening to it archived, you know that this is a dated show. I'm looking at an article here that says Prince reportedly stayed awake for 154 hours before dying. He stayed awake 154 hours before death. I'm thinking that it's a lot more than that. I mean, he stayed awake a lot more than that. You have to remember, Prince was a superstar. I don't have to tell anybody that. And And the guy was relentless in doing his work. He wrote songs. He did concert after concert. Sometimes he did three or four concerts in one night or one day. He was a workaholic, recording music. There's so much music out here, so much unrecorded music that he has. I'm pretty sure we're going to see a whole lot of Prince's songs. So he's got a barrel full of songs that were unreleased. So it says Prince reportedly stayed awake for 154 hours. I said, son, he's a very busy boy, my son, 16. He's very, very busy. And sometimes he's away from the house, you know, 7, 8, 9 hours. And then he'll come home and somehow he jumps on the computer, jumps on the Xbox. And then suddenly he jumps in the bed, but he doesn't sleep. He's up all night long. And I tell him, I said, if you don't get some sleep, if you don't get some rest, you're not going to be at full force the next morning when you are in class. And I think this is happening with with Prince 10 times, 20 times, 30 times over. The guy just never could get a certain amount of rest in his life. He needed sleep. He was exhausted. Among other, I'm sure there's other things that are going to come out in his autopsy. But this is telling, because Michael Jackson was the same way. He didn't get a lot of sleep. He didn't get a lot of rest. And when Michael Jackson tried to sleep, he couldn't, because he had the next concert on his mind. He had the next record on his mind. He had the next event on his mind. He had the next song he was going to write on his mind. He couldn't sleep, so he went to his doctor and begged for powerful and addictive drugs so he could sleep. This is the same thing that happened to Prince. They need rest and relaxation, and they found out that they could not get it because they were always creating. Being such a creative person kept them from getting the needed rest that they totally needed, because their minds were always creating. And that kept them from actually relaxing. So therefore, they had to go to their doctors, go to the pharmacy, and get these addictive drugs. And in some cases, a lot of these people overdosed on these drugs. I haven't read the article, but that's my take on it, and I think that's a pretty good take on it. You know, you have to get your rest. I know if you're doing 10 concerts in a week, I mean, that's totally exhausting, and you're doing this stuff for 40 years, it's going to tell on you. You're going to get older. Your knees are going to get weak. You're going to have problems with your hip. You're going to get a hip. I mean, I think he had two hips. And anytime you have operations to get new hips on your body, there's always a chance for more pain, more infection. Of course, he at 57, he couldn't move as swiftly as he could at 27. There's no doubt about it. So, you know, obviously from looking at this article, I can understand. You need your rest. You need your relaxation. Just like you or me, we go to work and work 8 hours, 12 hours a day. We come home, you know, the first thing we want to do is get into bed. Because you got to get back up and do another 12 hours. You need your rest. You need your sleep. But if you don't get that and you try to, you're not going to be any good at the next day at work. We all need rest and relaxation. I told my son, I said, if you don't get some sleep, you don't learn how to sleep, then I'm going to have to take you to the doctor and find out what's wrong. Maybe it's sleep apnea. I don't know. But we're going to find out something, because you need your rest, especially if you're busy all through the day doing important things. And these guys were entertainers, talented entertainers, totally creative entertainers. They were creating every second of the day of each day for years, and it caused them not to be able to get that rest and relaxation that their body needs, and it tells on them. And then all of a sudden, they're taking these deadly drugs, prescription drug, legally provided to them. These weren't dope or anything. It was drugs that you get at a pharmacy. So we're going to hear a lot more coming out of the Prince camp. And my understanding is that he did not have a wife, Prince. The late Prince. You know what? I'm thinking, I've been following, knowing of Prince for a long time, probably way back, way before Purple Rain, which was 1984, because he was doing songs, writing songs for other people. I mean, all those other people. The guy was multi-talented. But I never thought that Prince was his real name. I thought it was like a stage name or something. I didn't think it was his real, but I read his autobiography and it's his real name, Prince Rogers Nelson. which I think is a fabulous name. But I didn't know that Prince, see what you learn when people pass away? I thought it was a stage name. I thought it was a name that he'd given himself. But it was his, that's his birth name. And that's wonderful. And I always used to think of Prince and Michael Jackson as rivals when they were alive. And I was a great big fan of both. They were rivals, but Michael Jackson's kind of, I went in the Michael Jackson direction. Nothing against Prince, but, you know, because they were great, both great, wonderful entertainers. And they will both be greatly missed. Greatly missed. But they've died under some of the same circumstances. We're still waiting on an autopsy on Prince. But a lot of people are saying right now that it was a drug overdose. Okay? They're saying that it was a drug overdose. We have to find out on this. The autopsy should be released. But actually, they know already what killed this man. They're just trying to set up the public for when the announcement is made. They know what killed Prince, just like they know what actually killed Michael Jackson. We have lost so many good people. We have lost so many great musicians, folks. We have lost a lot. Michael Jackson, Prince, I could go on. We just lost Billy Paul, Merle Haggard, David Bowie, Whitney Houston. I could go on. Luther Vandross, Wilson Pickett. We've lost a lot of great people. Music is just gone to hell right now. We got Beyonce. I'm not a Beyonce fan, but I think she's talented in her own way. I'm not a Miley. This is what we got. We got some rappers around here I never heard of. I really don't care. Some rap is okay. Some is not. I'm a jazz buff myself, and virtually jazz is dead. But I still listen to jazz. I still listen to Miles Davis, Gene Ammons, you name it. I listen to them. Sonny Stitt. These guys are great. The music today, folks, I just can't get next to it. If I'm going to listen to music, it's going to be old school music. That's real music. That's great. Herbie Hancock. You name it. George Benson. These are great people. Ray Charles. I'm not saying this because they're African American. I'm just saying they are good or great musicians who've left a lot of their music behind. Whenever I want to remember a dead musician, I will just, you know, play their song, play their music. And it's great. It's wonderful. Barry White. I mean, I used to listen to Barry White. I thought he was God. We've lost a lot of great musicians. Music is not the same as it was 10 years ago, 20, 30, 40, the 60s, the 70s, even the 50s. That's why I say I listen to old school music. I listen to somebody, oh, George, you're out of touch. You're old fashioned. You got to get in with the new thing. No, I don't. No, I do not. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for hanging in there. Let's see. We're going to talk about, like I promised, the fire truck just went by. I hope they're not coming in this building. Okay. Five people shot sitting on a porch in Chicago. Five people shot over the weekend. The violence over the weekend, I believe, 10 or 15 people were shot and about 38 injured to some degree. Anyway, it's been a violent, violent weekend in the city of Chicago, folks, on the south sides and west sides of the city most of the time. But as I've said so many times, violence happens anywhere to anybody, anytime. It has no name on it. These guys drive by, these thugs, these gangbangers drive by and start shooting. And then all of a sudden you hear about seven or eight people getting gunned down, including children and babies being gunned down in their own house. Then people are being gunned down when they're giving a barbecue party in the back of their yard. They're being gunned down. People are being gunned down when they're going out to a nightclub, a dance party, a prom. People are being what the hell is going on? Instead of violence decreasing, it is totally increasing, and steadily we have a new superintendent, Eddie Johnson. What the hell has he done so far? Since he's been superintendent, violence has gone spiraled out of control even more. What is he doing? I mean, his job as a superintendent is to stop violence, prevent violence, and arrest the crooks. That's what he gets paid to do. If he's not getting doing those things, then why are we paying him? The taxpayers of Chicago, why are we paying him? If violence, if people are constantly being gunned down, they can't even walk to the damn store, can't go to the park, can't even sit on their front porch without being murdered. And then we've got this new superintendent, which in my estimation, it's just picking up a damn paycheck. He's getting paid between $260,000 a year, maybe more. Your job is to curtail violence in the city of Chicago. If you're not doing that, you should be fired and somebody else should. There's a lot of cities, big cities like Chicago, that do not have the crime that we have. Why? Because they're doing something positive. They're doing something great. They're doing something to, they have plans to curtail the violence in their cities. But somehow, Chicago, I mean, we have superintendent after superintendent after superintendent, and crime just spikes. It goes up, uppity, uppity, up, uppity, up, 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 up. And then you see these guys, these guys come up, they on television saying, basically saying, don't blame me. It's the parents, it's the gangbangers. Yeah, but if it's not you, don't blame you, then give up the paycheck that you're getting to people. Give up the paycheck because you're not doing a damn thing but getting paid. If you don't stop violence, if you don't prevent it, if you're not there to make sure it doesn't happen before it starts, and you're not doing your job. A lot of these drive-by shootings and the crimes in these neighborhoods can be solved if police would just patrol a lot more. I've said this for a long time. If you want to solve crimes in some of these high crime areas, saturate the place, saturate the neighborhood or the community with more police officers. Even go get the National Guard if you have to. You got to saturate these crime areas with police officers. If the bad guys see the police coming, they're not going to shoot. I acknowledge that police officers, they have a tough job. I acknowledge it's dangerous. They are working with outdated information. They are dealing with more sophisticated criminals than ever. I acknowledge when they go out on a call, it may be their last call. But they signed up for a job to do, they should do it. If you don't want to be a police officer, don't be a police officer. If you're going to be a police officer, then you are going to solve and prevent crime. It is so dismayed when five or six people get shot on the west sides of the city, and suddenly you hear that the perpetrator, the shooter, has gotten away. He has not been caught. What does that tell you? That tells you that that person is out there to do it again once he doesn't get caught. With all this sophisticated technology, you would think a police department would have the ups on the criminal. I just don't understand what's going on, how it's going on. If you want to beat crime in the, because it's just going to get worse year after year after year after year. Something has got to done weekend after weekend after weekend. It's starting to fall into day after day after day. Crime, crime on top of crime, and then some more crime. Then we just hired, as I mentioned, we just hired in Chicago a new superintendent, Eddie Johnson, and crime has gone through the roof. Obviously, this guy has no plans on how to stop the carnage. No plans on how to stop the carnage, the shootings, the gangbangers, the thugs out here shooting our children. I've heard people say, well, maybe they should put more programs into the neighborhood, give the kids something to do. A lot of those kids have something to do. A lot of them have great mentors, great teachers. But the thugs are going to be the thugs. The shooters are going to shoot. You can't give them nothing. Only thing they want is another gun so they can shoot. The police department, the mayor of Chicago are failures in their job to protect people of this city. They are always getting their damn faces on television and blaming, just like Governor Crowder, blaming someone else because they can't do their jobs. If you can't do your job, resign as mayor. Let someone else who knows what they're doing take the job. Eddie, if you can't fight crime, get the crime rate down, arrest these thugs, you should leave. But the only thing I see the police department doing in Chicago is collecting guns. A gun buyback program, okay? Of course, people are turning in their guns. They probably got 10 guns and just turning in two just to get the money. Nobody's going to give up their gun. They may, I mean, if they have five or six guns, they might give up two or three, but they're going to keep one or two of them. So this gun buyback program may be taking a few guns off the street, but it's not going to take every gun off the street. And I would think that the Chicago Police Department knows that. I would think that they would know that. And my thinking is they cannot handle it. They should go get help. I believe a few years ago, the Governor Pat Quinn and Mayor Rahm Emanuel at the time, they had an option of crime was so damn high, it was pitiful, folks. But it wasn't as high as it is now. And these two politicians had the option of getting the National Guard over to the south and west sides of the city. They turned it down. They said they didn't want the National Guard. You know why they didn't want the National Guard? Because that would make them feel like failures because they can't solve the crime. So they have to go outside and get someone else to try to help solve the crime. But that's pathetic because their notion caused more people to die. I think they should have had the National Guard over there. There's nothing wrong with that when you're trying to save lives. Saturate those places with the National Guard or with the police 24/7. That's the way you're going to do that. That's the way you're going to do that. Because the gangbangers are going to drive by and shoot. I mean, let's say if a lot of people were sitting on the porch one summer night, it was hot, it was muggy, everybody was out on the porch playing music and all that kind of thing, just in front of their own house, suddenly somebody drives up and just shoots everybody on the porch. If a police officer is patrolling that area, they would see that and catch the bad guys, even though it would be tragic, even though they may have even tried to prevent the crime from happening in the first place. If they were just constantly around the clock patrolling those areas. Because the bad guys know when the police leaves. They have lookouts. Oh, man, the police is here. 5-0 is here. They're patrolling. All right, let us know when they're gone. They know when you come, cops. They know when you leave. The bad guys know when you come. They know when you leave. And let me say another thing. The police officers in the city of Chicago, they know who the gangbangers are. They know where to find these thugging, killing, murdering son of a guns. They know They know who is doing it, probably. You've got to get over there to them south and west sides of the city and just clean that mess out over there. A lot of the people who live on the south and west sides of the city can't afford to move. They can't afford to move. They can't. I mean, they're on food stamps. They're on government benefits or entitlement programs or something. They can't afford to move. So they have to stay there within that area with all of that damn crime. But we're paying all of these cops, all these police officers to protect those people over there, and they're not doing it. Yeah, I understand police officers. It's a dangerous job, like I said, and a lot of police officers, they get shot. Some die, some recover, but it comes with the job. I'm not trying to lessen their position or anything like that. It comes with the job, just like joining the Army, the Navy or something. You're on the front line. It comes with the territory. And I just got through saying, if you don't want to be a cop, don't be a cop. But if you're going to be a cop, your job is to get out here on the street respectfully and protect the citizens of this city. That's what you're getting paid for. And you're getting paid damn well for it. You know, so I understand there's a lot of police officers who abuse their power. A lot of police officers, they're caught being brutal to some of the citizens of the city, and a lot of police officers shoot and then ask questions later. That happens, and it will continue to happen. A lot of police officers, I mean, whoa, they're fast on the trigger, but you got a lot of good police officers out here too. Not all of them are awful, but they're all under one umbrella when it comes to protecting, preventing, and catching the bad guys and ridding the neighborhoods of this foul odor of thug gangs. One thing about a thug gang member, one of the things about a thug gang member is that thug gang member is going to look like a thug gang member. They don't try to hide it. They come out with their pants hanging off their asses. And I mean, they don't hide it. Looking like a dirtbag thug that they are, they don't hide it. So you know that the police know. If I know who they are just by looking at them, the police know who they are and where they are and where they can be found. We have to stop this violence in the city of Chicago. Actually, we got to stop violence wherever it happens, whether it's Detroit, Ohio, Minnesota, Los Angeles, New York. We have to stop the cycle of killing. But you know what? I don't think it's going to ever end. I think society is just made up of just wanting to kill each other. You know, wanting to do this. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. I will be right back, folks. Let me. All right.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio.
All right, folks, we're back. We're back. That was a little bit of Prince. But I want to say another thing about Prince. Prince passed away, and we are going to continue to listen to his music and his new music, because we know he's going to have new music. He's got a ton of unreleased material, and I'm hearing that his whole estate is going to go to his sister. And that's a lot of money, folks. I think it's $300 to $400 million. Wow. And I read somewhere that his sister allegedly was a prostitute, a dope user, allegedly. But everything is going to go to her. So, I mean, he wasn't married. He didn't have any children, things like that. But his record sales, I mean, his estate is worth more now. Why is that when people die, when famous singers and famous entertainers pass away, they die, suddenly their marketability goes up. Same with Elvis Presley. I mean, when he died, people went out there and just, you know, bought up every damn thing he ever made. Same with Michael Jackson. You know, now with Prince. And that's where they make their most money. A dead celebrity is a billionaire celebrity. The money goes someplace, right? But anyway, yeah, I mean, people went out there and they bought everything they could. They bought everything they could by Prince. If Prince sang it, if Prince wrote it, they went out there and bought it. And you know what? I don't blame him, because he was a super guy. And he did a lot of great things for people. He really did. He really did. But he didn't make it known. I mean, when he went out to help someone, he didn't broadcast that it was Prince doing it. He just did it. He didn't want any fanfare when he went out to help people. And he helped a lot of people. And we thank him for that. He will be missed. He will be missed. And I'm a fan. I've always been a fan. And I always will be a fan. I mean, Prince, Michael Jackson, Luther Vandross, I'm all Temptations. I am a fan. James Brown, I am a fan. I always will be a fan. I've always been a music lover. I love every kind of music there is. If it's, you know, great music, Miles Davis, Gene Ammons, jazz, I love it all. Blues, I am a fan. And, you know, it just mind-boggling the way his record sales, his CD sales, anything Prince is just being, you know, wiped out, you know. And that's a good thing. People loved him. People would continue to love him. And rest in peace, Prince Rogers Nelson. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're going to move on right now. Audio?
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr.
Oh, no
Show
audio.
On Black Talk
Okay,
Radio.
Let's see if we can do this. I was kind of late. Okay. All right. You follow me on Facebook, folks. Follow me on Black Talk Radio. Follow me on LinkedIn. And, you know, always leave a comment or something, you know, tell me about the show. What do you think about the show? I have works on Amazon.com. You can always put my name up there in the text box and click and, you know, that stuff is good. I'm an awesome storyteller, as I've been told. But that's up to you. You know, that's for you to tell me. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Let's see what we got here. Okay. All right. There we go.
Open eyes.
Yeah, I want to say a little bit more about Prince. Prince stayed awake for over 6 days before his death. Like I was saying earlier, folks, he should have probably gotten his rest. And maybe he should have stayed in the hospital when they wanted him to stay after he made that stop to when he wasn't feeling well. All right, folks, this is the end for me. Check me out tomorrow. I will be back. Thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye. Thank you.